It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. We'll talk to an author and playwright this morning who has thought a lot about growing up in our region, how it shapes what we become.
When you live in a place that's so ruled by the natural world, it does get into your blood and bones. It becomes a part of you. It's part of your collective memory.
We'll have that coming up, but first, these headlines. In an address to the public last night, West Virginia Governor Jim Justice announced the state's first confirmed case of coronavirus, as well as the closing of some businesses to combat the spread of the disease. Justice urged residents not to panic as the state continues to respond to the pandemic that's so far stricken more than 4,200 Americans, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dave Mistich reports.
Tuesday's address was closed off from the media and the general public.
Just moments before I was able to come on tonight and talk with you, our health officials came to me and said, now we do have our first positive confirmed in the Eastern Panhandle.
Justice was not specific with the location of the case, but had indicated prior to Tuesday that the discovery of the first case was inevitable. As of Tuesday evening, the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources reported that 137 residents had been tested for COVID-19. 122 have yielded negative results, and 14 other results are pending.
We knew it was coming. We've prepared for this, and we shouldn't panic. We should be cautious. We should be concerned, but we should not panic. We should go ahead and try to live our lives as best we can, but again, we should not panic.
Justice also announced another set of precautions to be implemented to prevent the spread of the disease. He mandated that bars, restaurants, and casinos close in such a way to avoid crowds, leaving the door open for takeout orders. While Justice was not specific during his address on the timeline of these closures, state officials later clarified that it would take effect at midnight Tuesday.
Now, with that, we'll be able to have carryout at our bars, at our restaurants, but we have to close our casinos and we have to close our restaurants and our bars from the standpoint of people gathering in those and transmitting this terrible disease. Now, or potentially transmitting.
The announcement of the closing of some businesses came just one day after Justice suggested to people to, quote, go eat at Bob Evans if they felt like it. Justice's address to West Virginians came hours after President Donald Trump indicated that the state did not need federal resources as much as others. At the time when Trump was speaking, West Virginia had not yet confirmed a case of the virus.
We have all of this equipment in stock, and we're looking at different sites in a few different locations, and we're not going to need them in West Virginia, where so far I guess they have none. Still none, right? West Virginia.
No cases.
Big Jim, the governor's, he must be doing a good job.
Or is that just reported?
That's what's reported.
No, but is that a reporting issue, or is that they have no cases?
Well, that's all that, I just see West Virginia is the only one that has no cases. So obviously that's being treated differently than in New York or California.
Trump's remarks drew swift criticism from officials from the city of Charleston and Kanawha County. In letters to U.S. Senators Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore Capito, elected officials from those governments expressed concern over the president's remarks. Justice and members of his administration said Monday that the state currently has the capacity to test about 500 people. The governor and health officials have continued to urge residents to stay home and socially distance themselves from other people. He reiterated that in the Tuesday evening address.
You've got to listen to me. We've got to be in this boat together. We've absolutely got to join hands and use our power. Our power is be a part, be smart, look after each other, and try in every way, shape, form, or fashion to move ourselves forward.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
Work is underway in West Virginia to develop tests for coronavirus. Carol Lofton spoke with one expert and has this update.
Clay Marsh, WVU Health Sciences Vice President and Executive Dean, says several entities, including WVU, are in the process of developing their own test for coronavirus.
But we're not necessarily trying to replace anybody. We're just trying to add to the ability to test more people more quickly.
Roche, the first commercial lab that received approval from the Food and Drug Administration for their coronavirus test last Thursday, started shipping out more than 400,000 tests to 30 labs around the country this week. On their website, Roche said they, quote, worked with the government to develop a strategy that prioritizes labs with the broadest geographic reach and highest patient impact. These labs also have the ability to implement high-volume testing immediately. West Virginia is not included in the initial group. Marsh said, of course, it would be easier to utilize a test that has already been approved, but that it may end up being faster to make up one from scratch that the state can have ready access to.
And we will bring the tests that are the most convenient, the quickest to serve our population.
In a press conference Monday, Commissioner for Public Health Dr. Kathy Slemp said West Virginia likely would not be prioritized for supplies, because until yesterday, the state was the last one without a confirmed case. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:49. Areas of fog this morning with variable cloudiness. There's a chance of rain, highs in the 50s and 60s. Rain tonight with lows in the 40s and 50s. Tomorrow, a chance of rain and thunderstorms with highs in the 60s and 70s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Jaeger Airport CRW, now with flights to Orlando, Florida, MCO. More at JaegerAirport.com. On a recent episode of Inside Appalachia, we explore the benefits of getting outdoors and tapping into our love of the wild. Appalachian writer Silas House argues that too many people around the world are losing their connection with nature. In much of his work, the author and playwright celebrates the natural world, rural places, and people. He recently wrote an article in the Atlantic responding to the lack of media attention that he saw after parts of central Appalachia faced catastrophic flooding last month. Brittany Patterson spoke with him.
It's one of the things I feel luckiest about is that I grew up in the woods. My father worked third shift, and so that meant that in the summertime when I was in school, I just about had to stay outside, you know, or be silent. And so we were just always in the woods. We played in the creek all the time. We built dams, then we'd tear down the dam. You know, we would build elaborate rock fortresses for our Star Wars figurines. You know, we were incorporating our toys into the natural world. Just laying, you know, in a field and looking at the clouds and running with my dog. And even when I started riding, I had a little typewriter that my aunt bought me, and I would take it out into the woods and sit with it and write, you know. So even today, I'm 48, and I still prefer to ride outside.
You argue in this essay that in a lot of ways, those of us who live in rural areas, we have a really strong connection to nature. And I think the hypothesis or the crux of this article is for those who might be out of sight and out of mind, they start to lose their connection to nature.
Well, I do sort of want to make the disclaimer that I don't think that just because somebody lives in an urban area that they're not necessarily aware of nature or appreciate it. However, I think when it's something that dictates your everyday life, you are more aware of it. When you go outside and there's a mountain standing in front of you, and it is going to add an hour to you get into wherever you need to go because you have to go around it, or, you know, you have to drive way down the river to cross the river, etc. I mean, those are really substantial parts of your day. And I know that when I was growing up, you know, I had this incredible woods and pasture right in front of our house. And it was just like kind of my paradise. And then one day, all these bulldozers came in and it became a strip mine for the next 2 years. And it just sort of, I never got over that. It changed the way that I trusted everything, you know, to see that that could be taken. So I think when you live in a place of extraction, especially, you're real aware of how it can be devastated and how it can be taken away. But there is also some kind of, I think, when you live in a place that's so ruled by the natural world, it does get into your blood and bones. It becomes a part of you. It's part of your collective memory.
One of the things I was most struck about your essay is, in a lot of ways, it seems like that strong connection, it hasn't translated to society valuing rural communities or paying attention when natural disasters like the recent flooding happen.
I think most Americans want nature when it's convenient for them, and they don't want to go to any trouble to protect it. I hate to be so cynical, but that's certainly the way it feels. You see people in the Smoky Mountains National Park, you know, they're admiring the beauty of the mountains, and then they'll throw their trash out the window on the way out of the park. You know, it's mind-boggling and it's frustrating. And I think that if you really love the natural world, you have to go out of your way to protect it in whatever way you can.
You write, one of the consequences of society sort of writing off the experience of rural communities for so long and of people who live in rural areas is that by turning a blind eye to rural people, we're turning a blind eye to climate change.
Well, I think as long as there's been popular media, this has happened. You know, you can trace it back to the literature that came about right after the Civil War, the local color literature, where Appalachian people were among the first to be really stereotyped, you know, portrayed as throwaway people or people who don't matter, stupid people, dirty people, etc. And so when so much of the population thinks of you that way, that really helps the corporations, that helps industry. You know, it makes it much easier to come in and destroy a community when the rest of the country just thinks they're throwaway people. I mean, something I think we've become so used to being negated to a certain point, we just start to accept it and we just can't do that. You know, we have to stand up against that in whatever way we can.
Yeah, and recognizing that climate change is already here. It's already impacting floods and other natural disasters in this region.
To me, that's the main thesis of the essay that was in The Atlantic is, you know, I hear so many people in places of power like New York City or Los Angeles or D.C. who, you know, want to talk about climate change and want to criticize the people of Appalachia for their role in that, in the way that the region historically votes. But at the same time, these places of power are the very people who have negated rural people so long. So, you know, it creates this cycle that they can't seem to understand how that happens. And it is complex and it's complicated, but Appalachians don't exist in a vacuum. You know, they're very aware of that negation and will take power however, you know, it's available to them.
That was Kentucky author and playwright Silas House speaking with reporter Brittany Patterson. His online essay, published last month by The Atlantic, is called Eastern Kentucky is Underwater, but you probably didn't notice. To listen to the full interview, check out the latest episode of Inside Appalachia. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. More information on how to subscribe is at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our news director and producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.